Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. At the end of this series on hospitality, I don't know why, but every time we do a series, it surprises me somehow that we get to the end. And we've spent some time together, whether you've been in this room or listened to the podcast, studying three really key passages from the Hebrew Scriptures that undergird the deep culture of hospitality that just really permeates the Bible. And we heard that first week in the very beginning about Abraham and Sarah, and they took this huge step of extending hospitality to those passing by, and they did it, and they extended their table. And had they not done that, had they turned away from those angels, then the Bible pretty much would have come to a full stop right then. But it didn't, and we went on, and we learned that next week the real lesson of Sodom and Gomorrah, and that it was actually really grounded in a cultural and political system. Wes is going to help and remind us of that system, the hierarchy that was at the time in that order, where free men were on top, you know, and what came next were the free women. And then the enslaved women and men, and then animals. And this is important. There's a reason this is important, because we're reminded that when you're in those positions, you'll do pretty much anything and everything to make your position better. Either to try and get out of your line on there, or within your line, even there, you want to somehow be on top, and you'll even go so far as sexual domination on another human being or another group of people. So we learned about that. And then last week, we heard about the cadences of mutuality. For every you, there is an I. You know, that's so beautiful. It's a picture. It paints a picture in the book of Ruth of a solid, strong, loving, caring relationship, which is the basis then of a solid, strong, loving, caring, mutual community. But how do we achieve this when we continually label people as in or out or foreign or immigrant or so-called native? How do we maintain that? And so we worked on that last week. We have also listened to the witnesses of folks from our community, from the table, as well as the wonderful guest Lorenza, who talked of each of them in their own way, what they know to be true about hospitality for themselves. For we know that witnessing is simply telling what we know to be true. And our kitchen tables have been sorting through the questions of who the stranger might actually be and how we welcome strangers to our tables. It might be fair to say that many of us have come to some actual new understandings over these last 3 weeks, and we hold new vision for how we move and have our being in all of the different places of our lives. And maybe some of us have even tried to act on these new awarenesses, done some experimenting. So where does all that end us up here today? Where do we find ourselves this morning, having traveled these weeks together? Well, we have one more passage that we'd like to read. It's from the Gospel of Matthew, going to be read by Matt. We're going to move into the New Testament where hospitality continues, but it extends and it transforms from where it was in the Hebrew scripture into New Testament understandings. Jesus's gracious and sacrificial hospitality that we learn about through his life and ministry and death is what undergirds all the hospitality of his followers. The definition we've really been working with by Christine Pohl these weeks is this. The definition of hospitality and the stranger is when a stranger is welcomed into a safe and personal and comfortable place, a place of respect and acceptance, an actual friendship. And even if it's only brief, you know, even if it's an hour or a night or a weekend or longer, the stranger is included in a life-giving and life-sustaining network of relations. And that kind of welcoming involves attentive listening and mutual sharing of lives and of life stories. And it requires really an openness of heart and a willingness to make one's life visible, your own life, our lives, visible to other people. And it requires a generosity of time and resources. So that's the definition we've been working with, and we end up, when all is said and done, in this Gospel of Matthew. And let me just say, before he reads it, try to be open. Try not to be scared. Try to take heart. Try not to feel discouraged when you hear these words. If you've heard them forever and you've put them in a slot of, I know what this passage is all about, try not to do that this morning. Try to be open in a new way and listen with new ears to this passage.
I'll be reading from Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. And then he will say to those on his left hand, You are the accursed, depart from me into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not give me clothing. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? And then he will answer them, Truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life.
So here we are. This passage is really, and one other in Luke, but this passage is the passage on hospitality in the New Testament. It really is the plumb line. It's the reference of choice when one undergoes an extensive New Testament study on hospitality. But there's more. There's more in that passage than just hospitality, if you were able to listen. The image before us in this text is absolutely central to the whole Bible's understanding of its life and meaning and all of history in that passage. Really, it's the final act and the last scene, and it brings us from history to hospitality. There's a man Matt and I refer to as the preacher's preacher, Fred Craddock, and here's what he says about this scene. The Bible conveys the unwavering conviction in this scene that the history and human life have direction. We have purpose. Life and history are not according to change or caprice and no accident. Neither is a life cycle of repetition or an endless return of the same old thing. Neither is life a cycle of that. And life doesn't just turn on some great big endless wheel. And while we can find in the Old Testament like a residue of nature religion, which structured its faith and ritual upon the routine, you know, of changing and returning seasons, the principal story of what we just heard shatters that cycle. It says that history has an alpha and an omega, a beginning and an end, and there was a genesis of all life, and there's going to be an end to all life. In this scene before us, that end, it's God who's going to finish it up. It's God that's going to finish history. So here in this scene, judgment, though, judgment, if you could stay with it, does not mean a final, like, put down. It's not a scathing criticism. It's not a vindictive anger without principle or norm. You know, it's not a vicarious judgment. It's actually, if you can hear it this way, it's a clarification. It's a clarifying moment. It's judgment as light being shown on the truth, right? And the truth reveals what actually has transpired for us in human behavior in all of our relationships. And that's what we all want, right? It's what we say we want. We want the truth. We seek the truth with a capital T. Can't tell you how many people have asked me, I just want to know what is true. So here it is. You just heard it. God is going to reveal the truth at that moment. Anybody nervous? I am. If you're not nervous when you hear that a little bit, I'd like to know how you go about that life. It makes me squirm a little. Because while the possibility of finally knowing truth with a capital T is like this awesome, great moment, it's also like this.
Answer! I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Yes.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
I carried that with me all week. Can't you just hear it? And he goes on, you know, Jack goes on to say why Tom can't handle the truth. We can't often handle the truth because each of us is such a tangled up combination, you know, of mixed motivations and underlying desires and confused goals and contradictions and ambiguity, and that is just one individual. Just one. If you go to the wide angle shot and you take that into our family unit, oh. And then you go larger and you include our whole community, And then you include our nation, which we start next week, you know. It quickly can become so overwhelming, and we get paralyzed. What might be and what actually is become really difficult to distinguish. I want to tell you a funny story I learned this week. It's a legend, except I went to Snopes.com, and it says it's true. So I think it must be true. Let's see his pictures. Everybody know who that is? It's Charlie Chaplin, right? He has a very distinctive look, and he has a distinctive walk where he would do his cane, and he would walk kind of penguinish-like. So, and he was around and very popular in silent films, and especially it was in the early 1900s, and across our nation, there swept Charlie Chaplin look-alike contests. And they were all over. And there was one in San Francisco. So guess who entered? Charlie Chaplin. Guess who didn't even make it into the finals? He did not make it into the finals of his own contest. People didn't think he looked and acted enough like Charlie Chaplin. Can you believe that? They quoted him as saying, "I was tempted to give lessons in the Chaplin walk out of pity as well as a desire to see the thing done right." Wow. It's really hard to distinguish what's real, what's true. And sometimes, you know, we are just so clear that we know it, that we miss what is. Charlie was ready to give his people a lesson. Jesus gives us many lessons to help us. He uses sheep and goats and wheat and tares and good seed and bad seed and foolish maidens and wise ones, you know. We work really hard to understand all of this. We do good. We look at how we're trying to do no harm. We practice our Christian disciplines. We do all of that. And if there was a contest, could we, you know, spot the real Christian? Could we? Or would we not even make the finals? For when judgment comes, what I really want you to also think about hearing in that passage, could you hear it? When the judgment came, the sheep and the goats are both confused. The sheep and the goats say, "When?" Right? "When?" they both ask Jesus. Well, I think we know what's going on inside them. They're reviewing their lists. That's what we do, right? Human beings. Did I get one per? One hungry person fed this week? Check. One thirsty person, did I give them a drink? Check. One stranger, did I recognize somebody as a human being that I'm not on a first name basis with? Check. Phew, I'm good. I'm in. I extended hospitality in every quarter category there is. I'm in. Am I in? Think about it again. Review the story. Both groups are totally baffled by the verdict that Jesus gives them. Both groups don't know when they did what they did. The sheep don't know when they saw Jesus. The goats don't know when they didn't see Jesus. But Jesus knows. Whew. Okay, that's good. Jesus knows. That's great. Is that great? You know when you were afraid that your mom had eyes in the back of her head? Is that great? If Jesus knows the truth, what does that tell us about him? I think one thing is he keeps track. It tells us he keeps track of things in ways we don't. In ways we don't even understand, obviously. And one thing that was written by this passage, one great preacher said, here's what you can know for sure. You cannot win this truth as though you're on a scavenger hunt. You know? You can't win by checking off one hungry person, one thirsty one, one sick one, one in prison. You can't toss a quarter in a cup or throw a dollar bill at an old woman in the grocery store, and you can't call that done. You cannot use people that way. And besides, emptying our pockets may not even be the right thing to do. Right? So what is the question then for us? Is the question, how do you define hospitality? No. Is the question, how do you make Jesus love you so you're a sheep? No. Is the question, how do I love Jesus so you're a goat a little bit? Not quite. I don't think so. Because often those are the questions, you know. That's it. Do you love Jesus? That's the litmus test. Are you on fire for Jesus? If you can say yes to that question, then you're in, right? But that doesn't seem like what the Gospel of Matthew wants as the final takeaway today. And maybe that's why this scene, the scene known as the Last Judgment, that's what it's called, actually happens before Jesus dies in the Gospel of Matthew. Because we can relate to this scene. We're not all going to have some dramatic death on a cross in a public square, right? We're not. We are all, every single one of us, going to die eventually. And so, because we all have that in common, maybe that's why this is put here. So we all wonder together, not how do I define hospitality, not how do I make Jesus love me, not how do I love Jesus. We wonder, am I in? Did I make it? Right? Am I in? Is he going to choose me? So the only way to know, if that's ever possible, I'm not sure it is to say, then, you see, that Jesus is present in every one, in every single person. Everyone, all means all. That is the truth. And then, if we say that, the rest almost is easy, right? It's just that hard part, the eyes. The eyes, when we actually look at each other. Because that's what he's saying we have to do. Christ promises us that when we actually look at each other, know as we are known, then he's present. And the only way we can possibly tell this, really know this, is to be in relationship one with another. And to look each other square in the eye. Remember, really remember and hear this. Those goats are not condemned for doing the wrong thing. They're not condemned even for doing a bad thing. They're condemned for doing nothing. No thing. They saw no relationship between themselves and the stranger. They felt no kinship with the lost and the lonely. They had no compassion for the least of them. No thing, nothing. But even though that is true, notice where they stand. Right alongside the sheep. And saying with one voice, when was it that we saw you, Jesus? The sheep and the goats are standing right shoulder to shoulder in the same field, in the same community, in the same pews. Sometimes we might even say we are all part of the same flock. So when it's all said and done in those last days and hours, in that last moment, let's remind ourselves that we are all tended by this man Jesus, known as the Good Shepherd. In this case, maybe he's also a good goat herd. And when he calls our name and his eyes meet our eyes, he knows. He's seen us when we don't think anyone is watching. And that means he's seen us at our worst. He's seen us at our best. He's seen us everywhere in between. And he knows the effort it takes to meet another person's eyes. He's done it himself. He knows when we've made no effort. And that includes, of course, the effort it takes to go outside of our community, as well as the effort to stay within. So in this way, the truth becomes a question. How do you respond? How did you extend hospitality? What did you do in the face and the eyes of the needs of your brothers and your sisters? That's the truth. And it's up to each of us to answer that question, because that's what he's asking.
Oh, freedom. Oh.